Welcome to this special episode of Frequency Matters, the RF and Microwave Update Series. I'm Pat Hindle. I'm here with my co-host Gary LaRude and special guest Satish Dhanasekaran, President of the Communications Solutions Group at Keysight Technologies. Welcome, Satish.
Thank you, Patrick and Gary. I hope both of you are staying safe and healthy through this time.
Satish, sorry we didn't get a chance to catch up at Mobile World Congress since it was canceled, but let's start off with an overview. Where does the 5G market stand now, including the effects of COVID-19 outbreak?
Yeah, Patrick, great question. I would say that it's still early days in 5G with tremendous momentum on the innovation front, the deployment front, and equally important is this runway of a roadmap that's forming for the industry that I think will keep us all very busy for the next few years, maybe 3 to 5 years to come. I would say that the state of the industry in 2020, we have probably exit this year with close to 1 million base stations deployed with 5G capability, over 150 million handsets is the current projection, maybe more. A large amount of the deployment activity in China is accelerating at this as we speak today, including pretty good progress in Korea and Japan and the U.S. We see slowdowns in Europe as a contracting force. But that's what's going on today. But if you zoom out and look at the big picture, most of the deployments right now are sub 6 gigahertz with let's say the non-standalone version of this of 5G. And I think the progress that we're going to experience over the next 3 to 5 years will be the adoption of higher frequency or millimeter wave, and followed up with let's say the standalone versions of 5G. As I think those are going to become necessities if you want more capacity and if you want more, let's say, better performing and a lower latency network. Many countries of the world are starting to mandate latency requirements. And this tells you how important 5G is. It's not just making your smartphones, perform better, but it's about, providing the fabric for the new digital economy of the future. And I think that's a very exciting vision that is forming and is being realized. For Keysight, I think for us, it's always been a strategic priority for the company from day one to lead in 5G. We've made many acquisitions, as you're aware, which have enabled us to put out a industry-leading platform all the way from layer 1 to layer 7, both on all sites, both wireless and on the wireline side of the networks. And we're well-positioned. In fact, in the first half, we've just launched 90 new solutions in the first half of the year, first half of our fiscal year, which starts in November last year. And we're continuing to innovate and engage with customers. The surprising fact, maybe through the COVID crisis, is how busy we have been. All of us engaged in 5G have, the intensity of customer engagements have been high. In fact, folks working from home created a little bit of a dynamic, but even that notwithstanding, we continue to be very busy and engaged with customers as they are progressing their schedules. And I expect in the second half of the calendar year, as COVID hopefully recedes a bit and customers come online and start to return to their respective sites, we'll see the activity set with 5G pick up even more.
Satish, dynamic spectrum sharing and integrated access backhaul seem to be key technology enablers for 5G. Open RAN is another topic we're hearing a lot about, proposed as a means to reduce cost and an operator's dependence on a single network equipment manufacturer. What's your view of these and the challenges facing their adoption?
Let me point out to a few industry teams that you highlighted, Gary, that represent this dynamic roadmap that we see forming in the industry. Open RAN is clearly a much more than just a technology. It's a business model transformation that has a potential to accelerate innovation on the RAN front. I mean, you think about traditional RAN being a monolithic block and of compute power and software and hardware that goes together, and that has limited operators, many of them, including Rakuten, who started to deploy this, have found that it has unshackled them from the limitations of being locked with one particular supplier. And the promise of Open RAN clearly is you're now able to disaggregate the RAN into its fundamental building blocks, the radio, the baseband units, the connectivity between them, and the digital unit. And therefore, you're now able to, you know, source these capabilities from different suppliers in the food chain that enable you to go faster and deploy new features sooner. And I think that's the promise. And it's very exciting and interesting. And the Open RAN Alliance has started to see considerable interest on the technology front. The United States is taking, with the FCC, has taken a pretty strong interest in taking a look at this technology. I am part of the FCC's industry advisory board, and we have taken a deeper look at how ready Open RAN is to commercialize. And we've talked to multiple suppliers that are part of this eco-forming ecosystem, starting with the folks that make CPUs, to GPUs, to software companies that enable this virtualization trend. And it's interesting and exciting in its possibilities. But my sense is it's still got some ways to go in fleshing out who owns the entire technology stack. In the case of Rakuten, they've already made a lot of investments, as you'll hear from Tariq when he describes it, in building out the entire IT stack that's needed to support OSS and other capabilities so, you know, that they can actually deploy it. It remains to be seen how quickly multiple operators may be able to embrace that sort of approach to do it. But at the heart of it for test, it comes down to interoperability. Are we able to interoperate between different parts of the RAN that have been, just say, designed by different suppliers? And so that's a place where we believe we can play a leading role, and we are enabling the industry by providing Open RAN capable tools and solutions so that they can progress this idea forward into a deployable one at scale. Dynamic spectrum sharing, DSS, is another, let's say, feature that's been implemented or has been introduced, I should say, in release 15. And it facilitates a cost-effective way for operators to get on the 5G coverage teams, and especially by leveraging the existing LTE spectrum. You know, it's largely touted as a software upgrade by many suppliers, which has tremendous promise, because you can imagine if a network operator can switch seamlessly between 4G or LTE spectrum and 5G spectrum with a software upgrade. Obviously, that's got a economic appeal to many operators versus having to redeploy the spectrum or refarm the whole spectrum or convert it into or buy a 5G spectrum, for example. And so that has some promise, but there with that promise comes tremendous technology complexity as well. One is the base capacity of a network, you know, could be lowered because you now have to schedule between the 4G and 5G spectrum, so you have some overhead associated with that. But in terms of looking at a static scenario versus a dynamic scenario, you could get three times larger throughput gain by going with DSS. So if, it depends on what your comparison metrics are. But it's clear that in DSS, that there's complexities associated with the scheduler. The scheduling algorithms are now proprietary to the particular implementation. All of that has to be tested in the context of the whole system or the network and how it performs. And on the UE side, you clearly have to be able to handle, let's say, the numerologies that associate with 4G and 5G. For a 4G UE, there's not much of a change, but for a 5G device, there's tremendous change. So we've decided to take a holistic approach, and because of our ability to emulate both network and device in the lab, we've been able to create a DSS testbed for our customers where they can start to study the different mechanisms, study the different implementations of schedulers, and so that when they do go to an operator, they're able to show up with greater confidence. Interoperability is so key in this area. You can imagine a network with multiple networking companies that are part of that fabric, and devices implementations varies as well. So when you put all this together, you have to be able to generate and optimize your network. So there are some drive test tools as well that we have that allows operators to optimize their network. And but it is an exciting field that we think will gain a lot of promise, especially in regions where operators are CapEx starved. I think DSS gives them a quicker way to adopt 5G. The third area you brought up was IAB. which is, again, essential for FR2 implementations, to have backhaul that can handle, let's say, the vast amount of data that comes into a through a 5G network, especially when you're talking millimeter wave or FR2 implementations. And in the mobile use case, where maybe it's not as viable that you just throw a fiber in there to sort of handle your backhaul challenges, IAB becomes more relevant. But it comes with additional challenges with interference that that has to be mitigated or handled much smarter ways than previously. So tremendous complexity with 5G with all these underlying technologies. And that's the reason why we believe that the innovation in this field will continue for years to come, and we're excited to be part of it.
Satish, as sub-6 gigahertz MIMO networks are being primarily the configurations that are released first in 5G, what are the kind of the primary test challenges that you're currently seeing there?
Yeah, I think even with sub-6 gigahertz, as you pointed out, especially as you get into mid-band implementations, massive MIMO, you know, becomes much more of a standard necessity. As you move even higher in frequencies, closer to 4.9 gigahertz, you're really relying on using MIMO schemes for maintaining your link budget and capacity and coverage KPIs. And what we find is customers are very interested to characterize massive MIMO in the lab so that they're able to accurately determine how their devices and network or base stations will perform in the real world. And so over-the-air testing becomes much more important, especially to determine the performance of their device in the live network. And so that's a lot of area where we are working with our customers. The other areas are, as much as massive MIMO has been deployed, there's clearly need to go higher in scale, and therefore testing becomes even more challenging, and the test throughputs, even in R&D, is becoming a very important factor for our customers. So we're actually enabling that by disaggregating our hardware and our measurement IP, and allowing the measurement IP to reside in the cloud. That allows us to do faster captures and process information quicker, especially as customers scale their MIMO topologies. The other area where we see innovation in 5G, not just restricted to the sub-6 gigahertz, but I think this is very important, is in energy optimization. I mean, you can imagine battery performance, you know, it becoming a bigger factor for customers as they go into 5G, and we're still at the very front end of that, and in realizing battery and price or cost optimizations as well. So despite the fact that every, you know, there is a notion that 5G is here and it's already deployed, we see considerable innovations that will have to happen to get 5G to the end state where it can be adopted broadly for cost, energy, and performance reasons that I just mentioned.
How much 5G millimeter wave activity are you seeing? And what are we learning about using millimeter wave spectrum for mobile and fixed wireless access communications?
Yeah, we're seeing tremendous interest in the ecosystem to adopt millimeter wave. I think if you would ask the question 2 years ago, people said, well, it's going to be really hard. Maybe there were some business model questions as well folks had. But given the successes in auctions that have occurred and spectrum availability, spectrum policies have been, especially in the U.S., with FCC being very favorably poised to open up spectrum in higher frequencies for commercial use, we think it's gaining broader adoption. We see that in our customer base that have hired talent, because many of the engineers, as you know, in cellular communications, especially in commercial arenas, have largely been, let's say, working in sub-6 gigahertz frequencies. And so it's a significant retooling in terms of hiring talent, hiring equipment, and buying equipment that are test and measurement equipment to be able to test the performance of millimeter wave devices. So we see a lot of activity there, planning for the future ramps in the industry. We think it's exciting that the industry is actually looking at this as a standard feature. Some of the 5G devices, which have NSA, already have started to implement 28 gigahertz radios, phased arrays. And while the performance today might be limited to the coverage areas where you have it, so it'll be fairly restricted, but But as we start to scale this in large metro areas, you know, we expect that millimeter wave will become, widely used, and people will start to get this sort of experience that they can get today in much more static situations. For fixed wireless, it's clear Verizon has really put us taking the ground and is starting to increase the coverage there. And I think as spectrum becomes more available, that's a much more, let's say, clearer use case that has clear economic value for some operators in some parts of the world that that can deploy it and get us faster speeds to the home. But I'm equally excited by the work we're seeing in the industry across chipset companies, device companies, and NEMs to enable mobile millimeter wave, let's say, capabilities.
Satish, we hope that everyone at Keysight is doing well. How is the company handling the remote working situation?
You know, the company, you know, it's founded, as you know, we're the founding business of HP, Bill and Dave Packard. So from our roots, we're a people-first company. But you start to see that in the way we lead. Our CEO, Ron Nersesian, has been in this business all his career. And his first concern was for the health and safety of our employees. I remember we were in New York Stock Exchange on March 5th. Giving our investors a preview for, you know, it was our investor day event, preview for the company's future direction. And while we were returning from that trip, that was the first time we started to hear about COVID not just being a China event, but maybe becoming more of an international event with significant concerns or risks, I should say, in Europe and for our U.S. destination. So we did not wait for many of the counties or countries even to declare stay at home or shelter in place or orders. We actually took a proactive stance, and Ron was, very clear that we would want our employees safe to make all our employees work from home. And we in fact shut down our manufacturing facility for a few weeks until we could determine that whether things were safe in doing so. We also, as you know, design and test a lot of solutions for aerospace and defense customers. And therefore, we've been, categorized in many parts of the world as an essential service. So we were operating under that mode in a very limited fashion to take care of our customers in the defense industry, in communications industries, in healthcare industries. So we continue to make contributions to the essential services industries as to enable them to continue to be successful. We also, taken a proactive stance to help our communities. And I think that's something we're proud of as we go through this, in making donations of both, protective equipment and also monetary contributions from the company and the employees. But overall, I would say we're very proud of the way our employees have handled the situation. Working from home can be challenging and isolating for many folks, especially in Europe, where it was pretty severe and people had to stay in smaller apartments and were locked in for longer periods of time. But I think the culture of the company, which relies on collaborative fabric, really shined through this time. And we were able to keep our employees engaged to a very high level through this crisis. And we're able to, turn this sort of unfortunate event into a few positives. As I mentioned to many of my friends, there's not been a time in my career over the last 10 years where I have not had to travel for 90 days in a row. And I know this is true for me, for you, for many of my colleagues, and we're all finding a little bit of a respite from travel and maybe adding a few years back to our life this way. And we're finding new ways of working. And the pace of innovation has not slowed, either in our company or at the industries we serve. The communications is becoming even more critical to society. And through all of this, we're finding that there will be advances that will be needed both on the infrastructure side and the way these technologies are deployed to make it more robust, given how important it is for society. And therefore, I think any pause in adoption of technologies here is only in the short term as folks deal with the COVID crisis. But as the situation gets better, we'll start to see a bigger scale adoption of these technologies. And so the rate of innovation in the industry or in Keysight has not slowed. In fact, we feel like through this work at home, we're getting greater productivity because folks don't have to commute as much. And we're now able to reach people differently. We're able to work far more efficiently in some cases, especially with software engineers, where the productivity has actually gone up dramatically for us.
We've been speaking with Satish Dhanasekaran, president of Keysight's Communication Solutions Group. Satish, thank you for your time today and sharing your insight.